This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 519, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 519. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
It's nice to see Ron survive the desert.
I did. I survived. The come down wasn't too bad.
Did you dig yourself out on your own? Did you have some tools with you?
Well, I had some help. Luckily, I'm going to stop here. The things I was about to say, I just stopped it.
I like how mature Ron makes better choices.
I'm trying. Every day I'm trying. I'm trying to be the shepherd.
We are a fanboy, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks our favorite book. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about other stuff. This week's a little different because we're doing a bunch of voicemails to say goodbye to the voicemail line. But we'll be having fun regardless. No matter what we do, we're having fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, so you're out of luck if you don't like them. Ron?
Yep.
You had the pick, and it's not Superman. It is not
Superman, despite the title. There's your script typo. Pick of the week this week surprised even me. It was Captain Marvel number one, written by Tara Butters and Michelle Fazekas, who apparently are the team, the showrunners behind the Agent Carter TV show.
Yes.
With art by Chris Anka, who I saw most recently last year, at least, do some great work on X-Men of Bendis. So Captain Marvel is curious because I like the character of Carol Danvers a lot, mm-hmm. but I never. I didn't, not because it was bad, but I didn't buy into Kelly Sue DeConnick's run and then the comics that came out after Kelly Sue left the book. Not because they were bad or anything, just because, you know, you can only read so many books and I just didn't get on board and, you know, but I, you know, heard great things about it. Really built up the whole Carol Corp, and you know I saw it at cons. The fans love the character, love the costume, the McKellen.
By the way, I just want to applaud the reintroduction of the word corpse into our show. It's been a while, and I really appreciated that.
There you go. So yep, the Carol Corpse.
Just so before we get your emails, your tweets, and your message, he knows he's pronouncing it wrong. He's aware. We're all aware. Everyone's aware.
Don't feed him. Don't feed into him. Don't do it.
The more attention you give him, the more he does it.
Trust me. He's been writing a lot wrong for 20 years now.
For one reason and one reason alone.
Me. Every time he makes that typo, it's like it's looking at me and he's sticking it.
It's not even a typo anymore. It's meditated. Anyway.
Typo.
But so that said, with the all new, all different Marvel that's been rolling out since October, you know, I've been trying to try as many new books as I can, take risks. You know, part of it also in 2016 is that I really want to, you know, be more positive with comics. We want to, you know, like we, you know, I recognize that we've been critical of things of recent, and it's very easy to complain about these things, but it's also, we got to remember that they're fun and that they're meant to have a good time. So I'm like, all right, I'll give Captain Marvel a try. I have no idea what to expect. And boy, was this not what I ever guessed that it would be.
There's a little bit of the hint of that in the Ultimates books that we're enjoying.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that's going to relate to a realization I had, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But mm-hmm. But initially, in a nutshell, what this book is this you know kind of first issue launching the fact that Carol has accepted a position where she is now going to be the director of this satellite that is outside of Earth. This is really really why I picked it is because as much as this is a Captain Marvel book, it's really a stealth Alpha Flight book.
Totally is a stealth Alpha
Flight
book.
I don't understand why. It's crazy and I don't give a crap.
It's also a Marvel bureaucracy administration book, which we are all suckers for.
Yes, exactly. Love a good administration.
Good staff meeting.
Yep, good staff meeting.
Staff meeting. There's a big table.
Exactly.
You know what? We're gonna have to table this. Why don't you take care of it?
Who's taking notes? What are the action items?
Yeah.
So they've established what is called the Alpha Flight Space Station, and it is meant to be the first line of defense against protecting Earth, similar to, if you remember, S.W.O.R.D., similar concept. In fact, Abigail Brand, the green-haired woman who was in charge of S.W.O.R.D. All those years ago, is the second in command here on the Alpha Flight Space Station, as well as we've got Puck, we've got Sasquatch, we've got Aurora, members of Alpha Flight. No explanation as to why the Canadian superhero team is staffed on this satellite, but guess what?
Why they've been exiled to space.
Exactly.
I guarantee you there's an explanation, and none of us read it.
Maybe. I also think that perhaps there's not an explanation.
And I'm totally cool with that.
As am I.
But I just want to go, we're not pointing that out as a weakness, is that when you read this book, having not read anything before, it just is, and we're all cool with that.
I think. And that's the thing, is like, not only is it just is, but there's a degree of wackiness that just is as well. And
it's Puck, right?
Just in general, between the concept, between Alpha Flight, between at one point Rocket Raccoon is there because he's stealing supplies. This is kind of the, what I'm realizing about the all new and all different Marvel is that they just give no fucks about anything. Right? And this is really kind of, I think this is important because it sums up a lot of, I think, what we've been struggling with in terms of our complaints about Marvel and DC and some of the changes that have happened is that we were raised with a certain type of comics. And that certain type of comics was, you know, I remember reading early issues of Nova and, you know, young Richard Rider's on the street and in one panel, Thor flies by and he goes, oh, hey, there's Thor. I wonder where he's going. And there's an editor note going, read Avengers to see where Thor is going. And that day is over. Long, long over. And it's been slowly, and I understand it's been slowly evolving away from that. But I feel like with this new reboot, Marvel's just like, yeah, Captain Marvel, she's in the Ultimates, she's in Avengers, she's also in this. She's running an office in this. Who gives a shit? Guardians of the Galaxy, they're off in space. Peter Quill, they're doing stuff in their book. But Rocket's over here loading up the ship. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, and I kind of am embracing it. I kind of am enjoying it.
Yeah, well, it's a big change for you, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big choice, but the thing is that, like, you know, this book, you know, I think Chris Anka is great, is a really good talent, a really good style. Butters and Fizakis, you know, clearly know how to write a good story, and you know, and the idea of this space station protecting Earth with the members of Alpha Flight flying spaceships along with Captain Marvel, I'm in.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. I think we should mention, I think I was really impressed by Butters and Fizakis' writing because we knew they were good writers. Agent Carter is a good show, but as we've said many, many times in the past, usually when people from TV come over to write comics, they overwrite and there's too many words and. Not, I didn't find that the case here at all. I thought they handled the medium really well.
Yeah.
I thought they were just comic writers I hadn't heard of.
Agreed. Yeah.
I dug it. And also, like, I've been reading Spider-Woman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Carol's a relatively major character in that.
Sure.
And so this is consistent with that.
She's everywhere.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, like, felt like the same character. Felt like consistent. So there is some of that, I suppose.
I find it interesting that the base is called the Alpha Flight Base, yet no one in Alpha Flight's in charge of the base.
No Canadianism about it either.
No flag, no maple leaf, no mention of it. No,
I
like,
figured they'd all be drinking maple syrup all the time and playing hockey.
Yeah, no, nothing.
But nothing.
Nothing. You know, and Lord knows
I'm... bottles everywhere.
Santa boot.
Tim Hortons boxes just piled up in the corner. Yeah. But, you know, like...
Waiting in line for healthcare.
And the thing about it is, like so the
beer cans, every door you open is...
Protesting Stephen Harper. Wondering about this Trudeau guy.
But the thing about it is that, the issue starts with the usual kind of, conflict... in the middle of the conflict and then rewind to see how we got there, right? And what I like is that, like Captain Marvel's there, she's out there in space and there's an asteroid coming and you've got Puck and Aurora in little spaceships and you've got Sasquatch in a spaceship. Like, does Sasquatch need to be in a spaceship because he's Sasquatch? Like, it just makes no sense and I'm okay with that. I love it.
A lot easier on Canadians this time around.
Yeah, a lot easier.
Well,
yeah.
A lot of letters last time. They're mostly apologies, but... Sorry.
I thought this was super fun, and I wasn't originally going to read it because I haven't been following Captain Marvel for a while. But I have been enjoying her in the Ultimates books, which we talked about and made pick one of the most pick of the week a little while ago. And then Ron picked it, so I figured, okay, well I should read it, and I really liked it.
Right?
I thought the I love the Anka art.
Yep.
I love the style. It's sort of in the middle of the cartoony style that we like, and also the more realistic style that it's sort of this nice middle ground. And she's a compelling character. I like her voice. I like the position of her being a high energy, high action person who's now has to be a bureaucrat.
Yep.
And struggling with that. I think there's a lot of interesting things they set up here.
Yeah, it's got a lot going for it, and it's also got it doesn't take itself too seriously. Like the tone is light and fun, and I was very impressed by that it didn't weigh itself down in the mission or in the job or in explaining things or anything like that. You just got thrown in and went with it. And each little note, whether it was the space battle or the bureaucracy aspect or Puck in the shower or whatever, it just felt right. It flowed. Like, actually, when the issue ended, I was like, oh, it's over? No, I want more. Which is always a great feeling. So good job. And good job on the whole Captain Marvel team, Anka and Butters and Fizakis and Matt Wilson on colors, which is always great. And I'm gonna keep reading it because I think that this is the right amount of lighthearted, little science fictiony, little superhero-y kind of fun that I'm looking for in my comics. So yeah,
totally. So now we mentioned at the top of the show that we are doing a slightly modified version of it. Right, if you're a first time listener, this isn't a normal format. So we're gonna do some books, not as many books as we normally do. We're not gonna talk about them for as long because we want to get as many of your voicemails in this episode as we can before we shut the voicemail line down. So. Our first book after the pick is Batman 48, which is from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. They've been going 48 issues. Have they done all 48 issues? Is Capullo?
I think there was a fill-in somewhere.
There was one fill-in.
Wasn't there like a Raphael Albuquerque maybe? Or no, or was it Scalera?
There was one where Brian Azzarello co-wrote it. I don't think Capullo drew it. Anyway, the point is it's still quite an accomplishment to be the only team left from the reboot that are still together.
That's really impressive.
Even more impressive is that we finally see the light at the end of the tunnel in that Bruce Wayne has decided to come back as Batman. And what I liked best about this issue was the discussion between not Batman and not Joker on the bench, which was really a discussion about do you do what's best for yourself to make yourself happy or do you do what's best for society as a whole? Because the Joker was making the argument that they shouldn't go back to their old lives because neither one of them was happy. And which was an interesting argument for the Joker to take. And you can see Bruce struggling with it. He likes his life. He likes, being a guy with a beard who dates Julie Madison and doesn't have to worry about fighting crime. And even though none of this, I should say, is said. This is all implied in subtext. But he realizes he cannot stay in that life. And I liked all of that subtle discussion between the two of them.
Yeah, the conversation between Bruce and the Joker and like the nuance and understanding and trying to understand if either of them knew what they were talking about.
Right.
Was really interesting, really deep. Just on a quick aside, Connor, you had issue 44 had art by Jock.
That's right.
Issue 34 had art by Matteo Scalera. issue 28 had art by Dustin Nguyen. So you, a couple of fill-ins here and there, but for the most part, the majority of this run.
It's like one every 10 issues.
Yeah, that's just about. Run. Yeah, no, it's totally fair. Totally
and
fair.
At no point were we ever like, boy, Capullo's really losing it here.
No, yeah.
No.
He's completely consistent the whole way through. I will say that just hanging out with Bruce for a little while, I was like, oh, this feels good. And they went back to Gordon, and I thought, yeah. I don't think I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a bad idea, but it just it wasn't as compelling for whatever reason, which is just sort of a gut reaction, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't as compelling, and also it was coming on the heels of every character we like being taken off out of their costume. So it was sort of the
point.
Compounding, you know, depowered Superman, old man Captain America, yeah. You know, unrecognizable Hawkeye. So it was just sort of all of our characters were taken away. So,
because we like Gordon. I know you're a huge Gordon. I've been a big Gordon
as a character. Fan. I love him. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. Just didn't love him here in this particular thing. But now, you know, the issue ends with Bruce returning quite dramatically to the manor to say, take me to the cave.
You notice that Alfred only has one hand.
Listen, I'm trying to get past it.
They even kind of hit it the way they drew it, too.
Well, I was going to say, this is the mental breakdown of Alfred on that panel. Yeah. It's like poor Alfred has got his hand over his ears and his stump over his other ear, and he's crying. And it's like, oh, poor Alfred.
Maybe so. In the cave there's some sort of contraption he can put over the stump to mimic a hand.
They got a guy. It's hard to come back from losing the hand. I'm curious to see how they deal with
it. Can do it.
Bruce is on a team with a character called Cyborg.
Right. You think that they can find a solution.
70% of his body is robot.
Yeah.
I feel like he can get him a hand.
Or they could just reboot the whole line and give him a hand back.
That's true. They could do that as well.
Because anything goes. So
I just thought this was great. I loved the sequence with the Joker and Batman. And there are civilian roles. I love that they, in fact, are not going to give the Joker an origin. Scott Snyder said in an interview he would never do that because it would be too hard to find a story that would cause his character to be real.
Yeah,
I just think it's great. That's
brilliant.
Yep.
That's only if only they had that sort of idea with Wolverine.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Good point. So
I love this. This was great.
Good. Moving on, just wanted to highlight and give a tip of the hat to Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey and Matt Wilson for completing Phonogram, the Immaterial Girl number 6, the last issue of this miniseries and the last issue of Phonogram, 2006, 2016, 10 years, 3 miniseries. Well done, gentlemen.
Were you sad to read it?
No, I wasn't sad. It felt satisfying. I mean, we got a satisfying end to the story, to these characters, and I think that, you know, seeing this book as the arc of Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey's comic careers beginning, maturing, and then reaching the point where they are now is just really fascinating. They should be really, really proud. And as a fan, I'm psyched for them and just happy to have read it and now looking forward to more new things. So,
Josh, did you finish it too?
I did. And it occurs to me, and sort of there's a weird parallelism there, of sort of how long that we've been involved in comics in this other way and sort of when their stuff started.
I didn't even think about that. Wow,
it's very closely related. So, like, those are a couple of guys that we met when they were nobody.
Yep.
You know, in a way. I don't mean that in a bad, like before they
were just starting.
They were starting.
And so we've known them and their work all through this time. And to have this sort of close out, and I don't ever feel particularly close to this book or these characters because I don't know what's going on most of the time.
Yeah.
But I was weird that they named the story after a Pink Floyd song. But I felt a little something.
Yeah.
Especially during the sort of epilogue section, of Kieran writing, like when he sort of ended it, I was like, I felt something there, like a tangible feeling.
You felt like a human emotion.
Yeah, I tried it.
You were like, what is this feeling?
What is this tingling? I did, like, my favorite page was after the conversation between Emily and David, the eight panels, the 2x2 panels, couple of pages, when Emily goes outside and David in the rain and David sticks his head out and yells, "That was very melodramatic." It was just very Kieran. It was just
I like that. That was interesting.
And Jamie did a great job of accurately drawing, like, those are real places in London and a real representation of locations and you know, it's this fantastic magic story that has always existed in our world. And they've always done very true to that. So, yeah, it's neat.
So I'm so happy that someone else put Silver Surfer on the script so that I could no longer be alone talking to the microphone about how much I enjoy Silver Surfer. So this is the reboot or the restarting of Silver Surfer number one from Dan Slott, Mike Allred, and Laura Allred, who were the team from the previous run.
Yeah. And I gave it a shot because I know that you enjoyed it.
And?
I enjoyed it. I mean, it's hard for me not to enjoy something Mike Allred draws. So, like, I knew that, you know. This seemed wacky but like what I was worried with Slott writing this was that it would be he'd go over the top on the wacky mm-hmm. side. Now I want to go back and read the first volume of this to see what it was, you know. But like this was neat. This was just a kind of fun.
It's very much a Silver Age comic.
Yes,
being written in a modern age. That's what I was thinking as I was reading it. You know, so Don Greenwood his human companion and love interest and Silver Surfer returned back home finally after being gone for the entire last arc or the last series, and only to immediately have to go back into space because a bunch of aliens steal all of Earth's inspiration and imagination. So all the paintings, you know, turn into liquid and go up into the sky, and all the stories come out of books. And it's a totally a Silver Age concept. That's that kind of wacky kind of science cosmic thing would never fly for most books these days. And then all the aliens sort of take those stories and ideas and make them manifest for themselves. So like you've got Tron alien and Harry Potter alien and
the aliens turn themselves into every protagonist from Earth's history ever.
Right.
You know, and that was fun. It was just, you know, kind of like, you know, like somebody from
figuring
Star Trek,
it out. Yeah.
Somebody from the Warriors, somebody from, you know, Marty McFly's in there, you know,
RoboCop, Willy Wonka,
the Fifth Element, you know. Yeah. So
and that was fun. It's just Zorro. It's just totally like
Robin Hood. Ghostbusters.
This is total Sherlock Holmes. It's a totally just a fun, crazy science adventure, which it works. I have to admit, a lot of it is because of Mike Allred's art makes it work.
Yeah, it does.
You buy into this crazy, wacky concept, and you don't think it's too crazy and over the top because his throwback style seems very appropriate for the story being told.
Yep.
I don't think a different artist in this book I would like it as much. And that doesn't not to say I'm discounting the story. I'm just saying
magic sauce.
The type of story being told it works because the artwork makes it work.
Right. Yeah. It's and that's why I thought it was interesting. In the credits, it says, you know, Dan Slott, Mike Allred, storytellers. Like they truly, I get the sense that they truly are working hand in hand. And this is, you know, that's what you hope for when you're working in comics is that when the writer and artist, you know, kind of merge together and create a product, you know, jointly that just sings. And this was a lot of fun. I'm going to go back and read the first volume.
I think you don't really enjoy it. It's a just gorgeous.
Yeah. Of course. Well, Allred, he's great.
Yeah, great cover.
I don't remember if I said I was going to keep reading Lucifer or not last time, but I did.
I think you did because you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked the second issue better than the first. It was pretty good. I was worried that they were going to try to talk about Lucifer number two from Vertigo by Holly Black and Lee Garbett, and I was worried that they were going to try to do the episodic TV thing where every issue is one and done, which I don't want, because the reason I liked the first Lucifer is because it was, you know, 60 issues of one big story. And they you know, like it feels right. It feels good. I like the art a heck of a lot. They have the right sort of tone with Lucifer. He's going around hell and Gabriel's with him. He doesn't want to be, and he keeps getting the shit beat out of him. Like he had all his skin flayed off and burned at one point, but he's still got to sort of go along with Lucifer. It's you know, like a adversarial buddy comedy almost sort of thing. And then he goes to visit Mazikeen, his sort of ex-assistant slash girlfriend, who's now the queen of hell. It was fun. It was good.
Are you going to watch the TV show?
Nope.
It's getting awful reviews.
I didn't have to look that up to know
I'm
that.
I'm not even going to sample it.
I mean, the fact is, even if I wanted to watch the TV show, I'm guessing before I got to it, it would be gone. I mean, like awful that, I saw the ad and I just thought, oh, that's going to last. I mean, if they make it all the way through the pilot airing, it'd be amazing. Yeah. I don't know if they've already aired it or not.
I don't know.
They haven't.
All right. Well, I was hoping that we get a podcast of Josh trashing it, but I guess it doesn't even get that.
I don't want to do that. That's no fun. That's to hear that. Yeah. Well, then I don't remember the original story at all.
Let's remember the first G.I. Joe movie podcast.
Well, it was a different time. It's a different person.
Yeah, it's true.
It was a horrible movie.
Why did Snake Eyes have lips?
I don't even remember. I don't remember bad things about movies anymore. I don't hold on.
Yeah, he had a face.
He had lips. Anyway, did you guys read Devolution number one?
No.
No.
No? Okay, so Devolution, this is from Dynamite. This is announced a couple of years ago. It's written by Rick Remender. It was supposed to have art by Paul Renaud, and my only guess is that in the time from when the announcement happened to when you know the book finally happened, that Renaud was busy or couldn't do it. So now the art was by Jonathan Wayshack. This is one of those high, crazy kind of concepts that Remender's so good at, which is basically it's a world where humanity has devolved back into a primordial space. So like, you know, we get introduced to the character in Vegas, and Vegas is all overgrown and all that sort of stuff. And there's, you know, and there's dinosaurs and cavemen and all that sort of stuff. And this first issue had a lot of setup. It had a lot of explaining the world, that you know, and a little bit of that Remender social commentary, you know, about how we, you know, yeah, exactly, about how the devolution of the species started before the event that actually devolved the species happened.
Idiocracy, basically.
Talk about us getting fat and obese and lazy and all that, and tied into our devices. But what I was most interested in is that Jonathan Wayshack's art went way more EC style than I thought it would. Yeah, right? Like,
so that's how you sell me on a thing.
Exactly. And there's a real couple of we gave a spoiler warning, but there's a couple of turns and a couple of panels that I did not see coming, and I was like, oh wow, I did not expect it from this. I thought it was going to be way more, you know, kind of more similar to Strange Girl, in that, you know, it's a world that the Earth is in ruins, and now we've got a female protagonist who's gonna try to accomplish something. But there was a couple of, I was like, whoa. So and then finally with the end, there's a big kind of, I did not see, you know, the location moves from the devolved Earth to astronauts on the moon. And I was just like, oh, okay. And so I'm curious to see where this goes. I'm very, I know this is something that Rick was really excited about and took a while to come out. Josh, I would say go take a look at it just from the art standpoint, because Wayshack is dropping a little bit of the EC vibe, which we know Remender loves. So
he was awesome on Welcome Back, Cotter, too. I noticed, by the way, that we left off. I had put Tokyo Ghost number 5 on my list, and I don't even have a lot for it, but also Remender, I just wanted to. This is becoming my favorite of his series. Yeah. I've liked each issue more than the one before it. And I think that this sort of end of the first arc, number 5, was super compelling and a lot of bold sort of moves going on there. I really, really liked that series a lot, and I didn't expect to. I think the first issue was Pick of the Week.
Yeah, yes, it was good.
And I didn't really love that issue, but like since then, I've enjoyed each one even a little more. Anyway, if I did have to do a Pick of the Week this week, I think I probably would have gone with Uncanny Inhumans number 4.
It definitely would have been up there for me, too.
It was really good, wasn't it?
It was really good, and it was perfect Kang.
It was peak Kang.
You see, I'm not reading this because I'm anti-Inhumans, but like I saw Kang, and I saw that panel you posted on
Perfect Kang. Marvel.
Oh, man, I love Kang.
At one point, the is it Uhura?
Yes, it was Lieutenant Uhura.
It sounds weird to say it out loud. No,
it's Lieutenant Uhura, yeah.
Yeah.
About it's Uhura. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So he just says, basically Kang warns against messing with timelines or telling people the future, and he turns and Uhura turns around and is like, but you do it all the time, and he goes, yes, for I am Kang. It is the best Kang line I have read in a decade. It was like, I remember reading Young Avengers for the first time and being like, this is okay. And then Kang showed up and I was like, all right, let's do this.
Kang makes everything better. Remember Avengers Forever? Makes everything better.
And you don't need to reinvent Kang.
Nope.
You don't need to make a new Kang for a new era. You just need to do regular Kang.
And it works.
It does. It works. And there was a big war in this with time. It was the Inhumans. It wasn't the Inhumans who were supposed to be stands for the X-Men.
Yeah,
and it was.
I don't like the other Inhumans book. Yeah. This is the one I like. This is the good McNiven. I dropped the other book. This is a good McNiven.
Really good
McNiven. Kang. I felt myself wondering why. I know why, but why we haven't seen Kang in a movie or television? I mean, he is a great big time villain.
Yeah,
despite his ridiculous outfit.
Yeah, I think some of that puts. It's a tough sell. I sometimes wonder if the legacy on it makes us like him more.
My fear is if you try to translate him into the movies, he ends up looking like Oscar Isaac's looking in the new X-Men movie, which honestly has me worried. You know, so not for Oscar Isaac, of course, he's wonderful and can do
anything wrong.
Can't do anything wrong.
But shut your whore mouth, Ron.
Great issue.
Yeah. Really great issue. Yeah.
Cool. So Star Wars Corner, a quick little, we're going to wrap up with Star Wars. Star Wars 15 is the in-between issue, in-between arcs, and this is another page from the adventures of Obi-Wan Kenobi on Tatooine watching over Luke, with art by Mike Mayhew. And I know there are a lot of Mike Mayhew fans out there. I am not one of them. It's good, don't get me wrong, it's just a little too painterly, photorealistic for me, for my tastes. But
that seems to be the style they want for these books, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I see the craft in what he's doing, and I see how good it can be. It just doesn't sing for me. But this issue gets a little highlight because it features a face to face shouting match between Owen and Obi-Wan, and you get some more background as to why Owen hates Obi-Wan. So
I just can't get enough of this. Right? I don't know when I turned on it.
Yes.
Pretty quickly.
Welcome.
Yeah, it was around Vader Down, I think.
Vader Down.
Vader Down. I didn't mind Mike Mayhew on it. I liked it because as a sort of side quest kind of thing, you know, like a different alternate, not alternate, but they changed timelines basically. Like it just told us it was something different. It felt like I was reading an old Star Wars comic actually because of his style. I was like, oh, they made this in 1985. And I'm reading it now or something like that. But yeah, it was fun. I like the untold story of Obi-Wan Kenobi and what he's been doing there. There was some stuff that I was like, oh, they're going to go ahead and they're going to put that down in ink, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
We got Luke in the T-16 Skyhopper. We got, you know, like it hit a lot of notes.
Bucktooth Wormy.
Yep, Bucktooth Wormy.
How old is Luke at this point?
He's got to be around Jake Lloyd's age in Phantom Menace.
I want to say slightly older.
Maybe a little older, like 10 or so.
Phantom Menace, I'd put him somewhere between 8 and 11 here. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I definitely got echoes of Phantom Menace in this,
I will tell you, they really filled out some Owen Lars character work that I don't think that we'd been given before.
They really did. They really,
like,
really did.
Like, totally what his motivation is for everything. And I was like, all right, I buy all that.
Yep. Yeah. So, good stuff. I could have got it for a little more Beru. That's just me, though. I do love the blue.
Was there any blue milk?
There might have been blue milk. I don't know. I don't know if we got a dining scene.
It's ubiquitous. I don't notice it anymore.
Yeah, it just is.
Just is.
Yeah.
Of course. So. Probably, but, you know.
I'm so glad, Josh, that you're on board. I'm so glad.
On board.
Because it's fun. It's just silly, fun. You know? Yeah.
I think at first you're like, well, what is this? Is this okay? I don't know if I'm comfortable with this. And then you kind of go, what do I care?
By the way, I understand that they're about 10 or so years old, but you could have given Biggs a mustache.
Or like the wispies?
I think that would have been okay. That would have been allowed.
Yeah.
So
I knew who it was even though, but we're special. So
Yeah.
That's fine.
Did you just call yourself special?
We are, maybe. Yeah, I mean, in terms of people who are going to notice things like that. And on the spectrum, we are not even close. to that kind of Star Wars special, but compared to the general populace.
Wormy.
Yeah, wormy. We can throw around terms like wormy and just assume everyone knows what we're talking about.
Right.
That wasn't in a movie or anything.
Nope.
I don't even know how I know that.
I think it was in the... What was it in? Was it in the...
Was it the cutscene?
Novelization? Or was it in the cutscene?
I didn't read the novelization.
I think it was in that cutscene.
Yeah, it might have been.
I started reading.
Oh, with, Cammy, right? And, so, anyway.
I started reading the novelization, and I was like, this is terrible. I don't want to read this. That will do for the comics for the week, unless anyone has anything to add. I'm treating this like it's the Goodfellas Minute. In the meantime, if you like what you're listening to and you'd like to take part, support, contribute, or however you can go to ifanboy.com/support. There you will find a link to our Amazon affiliate page, and that will take you through to Amazon. And from there, you can buy whatever it is you were going to buy there anyway. But they give us some of what you spend there. And so it's completely innocuous. You don't even know what's happening. Just lay back. Enjoy the ride, and we'll take a little piece of it. You don't need to worry about it. If you want to be a little more direct about things, a little more upfront, you can become an iFanboy member, which is you can sign up to contribute $3 a month or $30 a year, or of course any amount that you so deem us worth. If you like what we do and you want to give us a little tip, a little like, thanks for what you do, I appreciate it. Here's a little cash. You guys are the ones who help support the show, and it really makes a lot of difference. So thank you very much for that, and let's move on to the final voicemails.
Yeah, so as Connor mentioned earlier in the show, we are bidding adieu to our voicemail line after 10 years. The trusty 1-888 Fanboys phone number is being retired, and we wanted to go out with a bang. So we asked you to send in your best voicemails and keep them brief. And so you guys ready? Just want to dive right into this?
Do we know if 1-800-FANBOYS is still active?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't tried
that. It was a different sort of service, as I remember.
It was a different sort of service. Yeah, maybe we'll try that and later on and we'll see how that goes. All right. To kick us off, our first voicemail comes from Jared.
Hey, my name's Jared. I'm from Northern California. I've been listening about 5 or something years. Big fan. And I wanted to call for your last voicemail show because I think I know what was in the closet. I've been thinking about this for a few years. And back in Avengers, Hawkeye, after he hooks up with Scarlet Witch, is going to open a door, but then gets freaked out and doesn't open the door and then leaves. And we never find out what was in the door. I'm pretty sure on the other side of that door would have been Agatha, Scarlet Witch's weird mentor, which would have showed that she had reset all reality and didn't know it and made herself powerless and, had her mom there as Agatha, the weird mentor lady. So Agatha the Witch was in the closet, is my guess. I don't know. Let me know what you guys think. All right,
bye. Ah, the closet.
Oh, boy.
It's props to Jared, though, for bringing up something that was that's hardcore.
Yeah, that's
hardcore. You didn't need to say you've been listening for 5 or 6 years, because we know.
Yeah, clearly.
If you're talking about that.
So for those who haven't been listening for 5 or 6 years or so might not know the story, but so in New Avengers 26, I believe, which was Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev art, it was post-House of M, and what happened was that it was a one-shot story where Hawkeye runs into Scarlet Witch post House of M. So, they both
came back.
And it was the Hawkeye from House of M, I believe. And it was everyone thought Scarlet Witch was gone. They didn't know, it was a mystery as to where Scarlet Witch was. And they had a lovely night on Wundagore Mountain. They were intimate. And at the end of the issue, Hawkeye opens a door. We assumed it's a closet. It might have just been a door. We don't know where the door led to, but he opens a door.
I thought it was her little closet next to her bed.
Yeah,
that's her wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He opens this door and is startled in what he sees, and then the issue ends, and we never find out what was behind the door. Even though Bendis teased it at the time, saying it would be a big reveal, and it's an important plot point, and it never got revisited. And every time,
that son of a bitch.
And every time we had the opportunity to interview, talk to, interact with Bendis, I made sure to ask him what's in the closet.
Yeah, I don't know if people necessarily know that, but for a good 5 years,
solid five years.
Every time we interviewed Bendis, if we were on one of those press conference calls, no matter what the subject, if Bendis was on it, Ron would end it with a question about the closet, and fairly certain he hates us.
I was gonna say he no longer found it amusing.
But here's the thing is, and I can attest this because I actually had more experiences with Bendis on this topic than you guys did, because even after I started working at Image, every time I saw him, I asked him. And what happened was, I really believe, is that the arc of this joke went from funny to amusing to annoying to pissing him off back to funny. Because I really think that in the past year, I got it back to funny, because we did laugh about it at the New York Comic Con. I was congratulating him about the Powers TV show. And I said, okay, well, I'm an Image. You're doing Powers TV. This is great. So what's in the closet? And he laughed and he goes, I will never tell you. He's like, on my deathbed, I will be like, and tell Ron what was in the closet was, and then I will die. So,
I don't think any of this is funny.
So good job to Bendis for being a good trooper. I do admit I miss those press calls, because it would be like a press call talking about Spider-Man, about Ultimate Spider-Man or the Ultimate's End or whatever. And they'd give us two questions and they'd go back. They're like, Ron, for my family, any questions? I go, yes. In New Avengers number 26, what was behind the closet? And
what's great is that the guys from the other website probably had their pencils hold on. Every time, too. Like, even though they'd heard it 5 times, we want to know.
Yeah. So good job, Jared. And to this, whether or not Agatha was in the closet, I don't know. I have no idea what's in the closet. Bendis claims it's like his his modified answer about 2 years into the questioning was that it's like the Marcellus' briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Yeah,
you lying son of a bitch!
Exactly.
that had a point in the story. The closet has no point to the story.
Yep, exactly. And the thing is that I understand that it was I believe it's a story point that he was going to take in a direction and never got to. That's fine. Just tell us what it was. So anyway,
he doesn't like to do that though. Like specifically, he doesn't like to take those ideas and change what already exists.
Yeah, yeah.
He's made a habit of that, so yeah. He's still. I mean, you son of a bitch. Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Let's move on.
All right, next voicemail.
Hi guys, this is Wes from Newport, Minnesota, and I was just wondering, what did you get each other for Christmas this year or in 2015? Either way, it's always good stuff to hear. Thanks. Bye.
I feel like Wes is asking me to tell you what I'm getting you for this year.
I know, yeah.
I don't know yet.
It's early.
It's January.
I got to start shopping now?
Connor doesn't take care of his Christmas shopping until at least June.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So I normally for the last 10 years we've been giving each other comic book stuff or comic book related stuff. There's been some variations here or there. We used to show the stuff on like our video show and everything, but yep. This year I went in the Goodfellas direction for both Ron and Josh because we've been doing the Goodfellas podcast.
And we have all the comic books.
Yeah.
So I got both of you the same thing. So what did I give you?
Got us the Scorsese Family Cookbook.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
And another book that I don't remember the title of is not in front of me.
What was the title of the book?
The Downfall of the Mafia, The Fall of the Mafia.
It's a book about how the mafia lost control of the garbage industry.
Yep. Which is close to my heart because my family is in the garbage industry.
So. No, said too much already.
I know.
But I went the mafia direction for both of you guys. If there was a mafia, I would have gotten you mafia themed. And I think I would like to hear about when you both use the cookbook.
I'm planning on actually this weekend. I was planning on dipping into it.
I can't find a place that has ground veal. So in case you weren't sure if I had taken it seriously at all.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm making that sauce. I just can't find ground veal anywhere.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. You got to get it shipped in special.
Guess so. Yeah, I'm making that sauce.
And so from Josh, I got a 1/16 or 1/8 size?
Sixth. Or 1/6
size.
Yeah, it was big.
Batmobile from the 66 Batman show. So it's good. It's a good 8 or so inches, and it's... it's
we try to be.
I'm sorry. I'm so, it's sorry.
A good, and you say it's a good 8 or so inches. Titmouse.
So it's displayed proudly in my office at work. It's awesome.
Okay.
And I don't remember what you were around. Oh, you got me an album, which is awesome.
I got you two really nice things.
I know. Listen, this is on the spot. You got me an album
of a record.
A vinyl record.
Yes.
That's why I said album.
The Ronettes, I believe. Ronettes,
yes.
Tying back to the Goodfellas thing. So.
And the other thing was...
The Adrian Tomine New York book.
Right. The collection of Adrian Tomine's art from The New Yorker, which is awesome.
Yep, because you like...
His cartoons, his covers, his... he did some stories, even. He did some sequential stuff for them. Really, really nice. There's a couple of pages in there that are just beautiful.
Yep. Now I have an Adrian Tomine book too. Is that the same book?
No, I got you. I swear. Yeah, I did thematic. I got you both a record, and I got you both an Adrian Tomine book. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I just decided this was the year of Adrian Tomine. So Josh, you got his newest, his latest graphic novel,
and a Dinosaur Jr. Record album.
Yep,
an early album.
Early one. Early noisy, loud. Early,
yeah, so, I was. Yeah. I was listening to your Dinosaur Jr. Playlist today, and it was wonderful.
Yeah,
what an odd band.
Yeah, so but you know, I feel like Dinosaur is a good band for you because they're from New England.
Yeah, there's totally
like,
that.
Yeah, there's a lot of the guitars Jay Mason's used and Lou Barlow and all that stuff. I feel that's a good tie to you. Yeah, and so then Josh took a risk and got me the X-Men Blackbird Lego set. Which I would never have thought of in a million years, and I'm looking forward to putting it together, and there's a great Lego Cyclops in there. So.
That's why I looked at it. I was like, oh, that's interesting, and I looked at the Cyclops, and I went, well, that's the right Cyclops.
Yeah, it's the right Cyclops. So.
With the hair out?
Yeah.
No, it's more classic, sort of burn-type Cyclops.
Okay. Now, Ron, which recipe were you thinking of making?
It's a good question. I don't know. I was going to sit down and flip through and look for something and go buy the ingredients and do it. I think a sauce. I want to do a sauce. I feel like you got to start with the sauce.
It's like the first thing in there is her sauce, because that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
There's carrots in it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, that's a good bolognese.
Strain them out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, a good bolognese has carrots in it, so. Anyway.
I'm learning all the time. I mean, it's a good book. Did we say what it was? It's the Catherine Scorsese sort of cookbook, sort of her story. It's actually super interesting to read. It's sort of about their family and about, you know, Italian food and stuff like that.
Yeah. There you go.
Cool.
That's what we got each other for Christmas.
All right. Next up.
Happy New Year, guys. It's Bionic Dave from West Hollywood, California. And I've been wondering, how successful have you been at turning non-comic book reading friends and relatives into regular comic book readers? I'm like 0-for-20.
You know, we do this all the time on the show. We're not necessarily going to be out there on the street proselytizing. Do you guys push to turn people into comic book readers? Is that a thing?
No.
No. There was a time.
Yes.
Yeah, years ago where it would be like, oh, you know, you can read a comic. Now,
in my 20s, yeah, in my 20s.
Yeah, now enough people know me and know that I'm a comic guy, and they're like, oh, they ask for recommendations, and typically what I do is I go, oh, what kind of TV shows do you like? You know, like I look for a genre, and then I make a recommendation post there. But I'm not in the Jehovah's Witness business anymore. I'm not in the conversion business.
No,
anymore.
Definitely not. And it's more of a laissez-faire approach. Like if it's there. I've got my brother-in-law, like, he started reading Preacher because I'd mentioned it to him a long time ago. And so, like, a year and a half later, he's like, I started reading this. This is great. And I was like, cool. I'm glad. Or, you know, if somebody's like, I love The Walking Dead. I'll be like, well, you could look at this stuff. But I don't push it. Like, that's as far as it goes.
Yeah. If people ask me. Yeah. It's the same thing. They know what I do. So if they ask me for it, I say, okay, well, here's some things you might like. But I never, ever, ever start that conversation.
I'm like, you should read comics. No. Well, I don't really want. No, you need to do it, man. But if they ask, I will always offer the benefits of the art form.
I enjoy doing the recommendations game. Like when I hang out in the comic book shop and people come in and we start making recommendations. That's fun. But yeah, I'm not pushing it on people though. So. Yeah.
And that's as Bionic Dave said. Usually the success rate's really low if you try to push it. People who aren't reading comics generally don't want to be reading them.
Yeah. You know who doesn't give a shit about comics? My kids. You know, and they're like, well, you're getting lots of comics to read? I'm like, no, they don't care.
Yeah.
So fine, you know? They're here if they want them. So, although most of mine they should not read.
So be it. Said like the emperor. It. So be it.
For I am Kang.
Oh, good stuff.
Jedi.
Jedi.
That is the next one we're reading. Jeez. From the forest moon of Endor.
All right, next voicemail.
Hey, guys, this is Mark calling from Austin, Minnesota. Long-time caller, never listened to the show before. I wanted to comment on Connor's Big Purge and the overall thought of collecting. I am currently going through and getting rid of most of my comics as well, and while looking through my collection is fun and nostalgic, there is also a tinge of regret over the not-so-good issues and runs. My new school of thought is quality in a collection over quantity, and while it is a personal choice as to what type of collection you want, it's taken me 20 years to get there. But we all know repeatedly moving long boxes will quickly narrow down what's important. I'm going to miss the voicemail. Love the show. Thanks, guys.
Well, you know, honestly, if people called in with voicemails like this more often, we wouldn't be here.
And you wouldn't be missing it.
You could theoretically still make a recording and email it to us.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, there's no reason why you can't record audio and email it to us. We will gladly entertain that. So
You all have like computers.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think I am of one mind with Mark, I think. It was part of the reason why I didn't get rid of everything. I kept the runs that were really important to me, you know, upper echelon stuff.
Alpha Flight,
absolutely.
Alpha Flight.
But, you know, but looking through the boxes, I did see tons of shit I would never, ever, ever read again. Yeah. And I feel bad I spent money on it in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of afraid of, going through my long boxes and having to deal with that like, why did the Flash Twins, why?
Well, that I understand why, but it's just, you know, it's just,
yeah.
I don't know. There's definitely...
Really, that's your biggest regret?
That's the one that comes to mind. I mean,
how many copies of Darkhawk did you buy?
I stand behind every comic, and I was 13. I'm talking about when I should have known better. You know?
Justice League Extreme.
Yeah,
in the 90s, you know, Extreme Justice League, like that kind of stuff. It's just like, you're never gonna read that again. Yeah. I don't need to keep it. I don't need it. I just don't need it in my life. And I think that's
son. That was worth it. That was worth every penny.
There's a lot of mentality that just, you know, amass as much as possible, which I understand that mentality as well. But, you know, there's also the mentality of have a collection that is actually of quality things that you like.
Yeah, I mean, my collection is definitely into the quantity or volume category rather than the quality. And I think that if I pare it down or if I do anything about that, I would definitely go in terms of the quality versus quantity. That's for sure. Yeah. So
at one point I went into all my long boxes and I pulled out, I don't know, like a one long box worth of stuff and maybe a short box full of like really cool stuff. And then everything else other than that, like I have no, they're just down here surrounding me in the basement.
You know, it gets cold and where you are, you should burn it for warmth.
That would get us through about 8 minutes.
And then put that video online and just watch everyone lose their minds.
Oh, Jesus.
Wait a minute now.
All right, let's
You know what? Fuck it. Oh, man, that's actually... I mean, we're still getting comments about wrecking that one slabbed comic book in 2008.
Right? Yeah, yeah, we got a new comment this week.
Keen comments.
Love it. Love it.
Huh.
My favorite thing, my favorite email we get. You've got a new comment on this video. Ooh.
I might. Okay, I'm thinking about that.
Let's do another voicemail.
Hey, guys. Pet from Wisconsin calling. Longtime fan, first-time caller, long-time listener. Love the show. Great topic. I had a question about if you guys have ever read the ElfQuest series that was done a while back by Wendy and Richard Pini, and also if what your guys' thoughts were on that, and then if you guys have ever watched, read the novels of Robotech. Wanted to get your thoughts on that too, being a child of the 80s growing up. I thought that that show has always been something I liked a lot. So wondering what your guys' thoughts were on that. Also, wanted to see if you guys were ever going to redo or put out T-shirts again. So keep up the work that you guys do every week, keeping me in the knowledge, and knowing is half the battle.
So I will admit that I am guilty of using ElfQuest as the butt of a joke.
Like in general, or just a specific joke?
No, like in some sort of dismissive tone, and like
punchline.
It's not like I'm an ElfQuest fan, you know. Like, and that said, I've never read ElfQuest. I give a lot of respect and credit to Richard and Wendy Pini, but for doing a very long run of an independent comic that's bounced all around publishers.
Well, that's one of those books you know, with Bone and with Cerebus and you know with Strange and Paradise. Like it's one of those long running indie books that doesn't get talked about enough in that vein.
I remember being at a panel in San Diego a really long time ago, and they were on it, and they were talking about it. And at that point, I was like, oh, I didn't really know what it was. I just thought it was kind of a jokey thing. And I was like, all right, it's kind of cool. I never read it because I didn't want to go back and start or whatever. But, you know, respect, which is what Connor said.
Now, Robotech is one of those ones where that's a blind spot in my collection, as well. Like, I know it exists, and I know there's a lot of people really into it and stuff like that, but I just never got into it.
I have friends like Mike Romo, our friend and often contributor, is a huge Robotech guy. Yeah. I was a Voltron guy. I didn't, you know?
Yeah, I was a huge Voltron guy, but I feel like Voltron was way less involved than Robotech.
Sure.
Like I felt like Robotech hat was like you needed to know manuals and you needed to understand ops guides and things like that.
Yeah, it was much more into the mecha culture. Whereas I just was a Voltron guy. I wanted to be on the edge of giant robot culture and not deep in it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And honestly, I liked a lot of the drama of Voltron. I'm sure Robotech had his drama, but you know,
when Sven came back after being thought dead, lost it.
That was crazy. I remember the day I watched that episode. I was at a friend's house. I was at Willie Johnson's house, and we were playing. And Voltron came on.
Willie Johnson is a fake name for your fake black.
No,
friend, right?
I swear to God, no, he wasn't black either. And we were watching Voltron, and Sven comes back, and I was like, "What the fuck just happened?" It blew my mind.
A picture of 13-year-old Ron.
Younger.
Than that, elementary school,
7 or 8,
like a mullet then,
Mullet, yeah. So, But yeah, no, that blew my mind that they could. I thought he was gone. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my God, that was crazy.
I didn't know stories could do that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know they could even do that.
Then you'd find out about bringing characters back from the dead. Oh, you'd find out.
But at the time, that was my first one. That was my. Like, he wasn't dead. It just he got captured, right? Like we just thought he was just
he
gone. Yeah.
He had a scar.
Yeah. Oh, he was dark. Yeah. It was like it was.
What?
Oh God, that was great. As far as if we ever do T-shirts again, maybe, maybe not. Stay tuned. So
you want to come over here?
Yeah.
Hook you up.
And anything could happen. I would Pat from Wisconsin. I would say to keep listening. So that's all. All right, on to our next podcast. On to our next voicemail.
I can't do any more podcasts, Ron.
Guess what, people? Surprise, this one's over. We're doing our next one.
I'm not done thinking yet.
We told people not to call in until you thought hard about your question, so we appreciate the effort. On Anonymous's part.
It's a valid protest.
It's fair. I mean, yeah, he needed more time.
I don't honestly think we gave them enough time.
That's fair. That's fair point, too. Yeah. So, well, okay. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, Anonymous.
No seasons passed during that era.
Yeah, no suns came and went.
I did not. My facial hair did not grow. I did
I did not get a scar and come back from the dead and give Ron a heart attack.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. Okay.
Next voicemail is from a disgruntled ex-staff member.
Hey, iFanboys. It's Ryan. You might remember me. I wrote for the website for like 3.5 years. And sometimes while I was writing for the website, you'd actually have me on this podcast, the Pick of the Week podcast. That was really fun. I know I still get to talk to Connor and Paul whenever there's a new DC animated movie or something. But, you know, I still read comics every week. So just whenever you guys want to call or whatever. Anyways, I'm glad Josh drinks beer now. It's been a long time coming. All right. Well, thanks for the show every week. Bye.
You remember him?
Vaguely. Was he the one that was always talking about rocks?
The one with the hiking boots.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That one.
Maddeningly handsome one.
Yeah. Yeah. He would disappear for months at a time. Something about Costa Rica.
Yeah. It's kind of difficult to have somebody on a show and they're hanging off a sloth tree in Costa Rica.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't even think Skype works down there.
So back when we had the website and staff full of writers, active, eager, young writers, we often had them guest on the show and one of us couldn't do it.
Go-getters.
And then slowly but surely, the staff all stopped reading Comics Weekly.
Right, see?
And so now when one of us is out, we often don't have a guest simply because it's hard to schedule because when we record during the day, most people are working, but also because most of our old staffers who we like and we know will be good don't read anymore.
I did not know he was still reading comics.
I was not aware, Ryan, and now I know. Now that we know, we will put you back into the rotation.
Yes, absolutely.
This was a helpful voicemail.
It was. Look at that. So
I feel like Ryan could have told me this last time I saw him.
Right. Or when I talked to him.
Yeah, instead of publicly shaming.
You've had many opportunities, Ryan, to even say this when we were recording the DC animated shows.
Yeah.
I'm still reading comics, you know.
All of our phone numbers.
Oh, gosh. All right. So now...
You're at your goddamn wedding.
No, could have brought it up there. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, all right. So now to end the era of the voicemail, the only way we could ever talk about voicemail, we go out with our first voicemail star.
This is Daryl, stalking the streets of New York for the last time. Cyclops was right. Why did they mess up my favorite character? Goodbye.
So, many people listening right now probably don't know, but way back when we first started.
This was worth it just for this. All this is worth it for right now.
Way back when we started, we would get these calls from Daryl from Queens, stalking the streets of New York, and at first we were terrified because they sounded vaguely threatening. But he ended up being the biggest voicemail star. People used to call in or request his voicemails.
Yep.
And then, do you remember the time he blew our minds and he just went deadly serious on us?
Yes.
Well, about the state of race relations in the like comic books, and it was just like we were like, whoa.
Well, he got real. But there was also like he would literally call us like as he's walking to the bus or the subway, yeah. And like there'd be street sounds. Like it was really great. And honestly, Daryl now is a very prolific podcaster in his own right. And, yeah. You know, and I feel like we kind of helped him get there. And, you know, of course, then he stopped calling us, which is unfortunate.
He had a lot of other shows.
He had a lot of other. He's got his own network. Like, it's just him.
Yeah.
But
when people would ask us, like, what was with that guy? And I was like, what are you talking about? That guy was great.
Yeah, and we met him at New York Comic Con. It was funny.
And he's awesome. He's awesome. He's so nice. He's such a good dude.
He had the nicest little boy with him. We met his son. Remember that first time we met
him?
Yeah,
I do.
His son was awesome.
Yeah.
Daryl's awesome. Daryl's a great guy, and he was totally in on the joke of his character.
Yep.
We used to love getting those voicemails, and we couldn't be happier, prouder for him having his own little mega comics podcasting empire going on.
Yep.
And,
good stuff.
So we could not have gone out on a better voicemail.
Pleased that happened.
Thank you, Daryl. You're the best. That was great. So thank you to everybody who's ever called in the voicemail line over the past 10 plus years. We appreciate it. As Josh mentioned, if you really want to call in with a voicemail, just record it yourself and email it to us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can email us your questions. We will continue to have audience feedback. We love hearing from you. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from, and thank you. A couple of announcements, a couple of things to look out for. There's a new DC-based hour-long drama superhero show on the CW called Legends of Tomorrow. I watched the first episode. Connor, I believe you have as well, too.
Right? I did as well, yes.
So we're going to talk about it. So stay tuned in the feed next week, or this week, actually, during this week.
It's either going to be right behind the show or right after the show.
It's going to be somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, keep an eye out. Look for us on Twitter or whatever to hear what Connor and I thought of the show, because I have comments. So
and it's a part one of two, so we may do two shows.
Depends on how crazy the second episode is.
Up until this moment, I've never even heard of this.
Yep.
Well, you live in the woods.
That's why I'm on. I have access.
People communicate to you via smoke signals and carrier pigeon.
Yeah, Brave New World.
So look for that show. Also look for Goodfellas Minute. As we've mentioned earlier throughout the show, our other podcast is called Goodfellas Minute. It comes out every Monday through Friday, and it's where Josh, Ron, and I talk about movie Goodfellas 1 minute at a time, about 15 or 20 minutes per episode. We often have very special guests on the show. We're going to have a comic book guest on next, I believe, is our next guest. No.
No, not comic book guests. His history
two guests. Two guests from now.
Yeah.
And we have fun people talking about Goodfellas, and we overanalyze, and we talk about food and clothing and Ron's family and
And we have a guest this week, I believe, and some one of our best guests of all time. So I advise if you like New York City history, you should listen to this week's shows of Goodfellas Minute. So
this coming week, this week's shows. And so check it out, goodfellasminute.com, and subscribe. It's fun. It's a good time. We're only about a little over halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, indeed.
You can go over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show. What do you think about all of this week's books and find all of our other podcasts? You could go back and listen to most of the Daryl archives. I don't know how you'd search for that, but it's there is the point. You can also follow us on facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, @CSKilpatrick, and @RonXO.
And finally, if you like this show or Goodfellas Minute, any podcast you listen to, please go to iTunes and leave a review. That's how people find podcasts. That's how people will identify new shows to listen to. And it helps every podcast you listen to. So take a few minutes to do that. And better yet than that is tell your friends. If you know a friend who likes comics, hasn't listened to the podcast, or is looking for a comics podcast, we're always seeing people asking for comics podcasting recommendations and on like Twitter and things like that. So we're always happy when people do that. And we appreciate when you recommend us to your friends and family, to your parole officer, whoever. So officers need to listen to podcasts as well.
They need enlightenment. So yeah. All right. Well, thank you again to everybody who dialed into the voicemail line and for listening to the show. Another great week of comics. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm not Daryl.
I know, you'll never be.
I won't.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.